Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of the Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find... We're sorry about that. Sometimes we have the neatest technical difficulties with X Squared Radio. The solar wind tonight, 363 kilometers per second, and the proton count is only 0.7 protons per cubic centimeter. That's the lowest I've seen it in 5 years. Basically, all we're getting from the sun now is a suntan, not much else. The sun is completely blank, no sunspots. Again, solar cycle 24 is a no-show. It looks like we're going to have to push back that 11-year cycle that we've lived with since we began watching the sun eons ago. If you were out last night before the moon came out, you were blessed with a clear view of the rift in the Milky Way. As it gets closer to Earth and we align ourselves with the galactic plane, more and more activity will be taking place. Gravitational effects from the supermassive black hole in the center of the Milky Way will become more and more manifested. Besides the quickening Earth changes, it has become apparent that DNA is being activated as well. Those little pairs of junk DNA are somehow turning on as we near these gravity frequencies. Sounds strange and unbelievable? Well, stay tuned tonight because you might have your mind opened. The Duncan Hunter National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2009 mainly deals with the U.S. defense programs and policies, but it included an order that the U.S. Defense Secretary investigate, quote, whether there are any security risks associated when companies that do business with the U.S. Defense Department participate in the development or manufacture of satellites for launch from the People's Republic of China and the launch of satellites from China. Those of you that are in industry have noticed that the cost of steel, aluminum, copper, titanium, and yes, of course, oil have gone up. Not just a little bit, whole junkyards have crushed their cars and sent their iron to China because their industrial revolution is in full swing. They are consuming megawatts per minute as a nation. The Chinese people are becoming aware that not only are they producers, but they are also consumers. And they want everything right now. And there's a wild card out there, India. Also very productive. Also very consumptive. So if you think we're just enjoying normal undulations in the price of commodities, think again. Think again, because there are forces and powers that are working on the raw materials of the world, especially those that have already been mined and smelted and processed. And now these countries have figured out a way to reprocess those recyclables back into something useful. And there's more than that. There's technology. There is the intellectual property that once the United States enjoyed leadership around the world, consultants, engineers, companies went around the world sharing and improving those skills with other nations. When I graduated college, I was one of the few Caucasians in my graduating class. The rest, Chinese. When did I graduate? I graduated in the summer months. Decided to go two summers in a row and get finished and get back out into industry. And that's exactly the course of education that the Chinese foreign exchange students were taking. They were here, enrolled in our colleges, getting degrees in subjects such as nuclear chemistry, and then going back to China. We knew it was only a matter of time before the technology that they designed demanded the raw materials to build it. And now we are realizing that. And now that we're nearing the end of the Bush administration, we will see a plethora of executive orders and little-known legislations become law. U.S. President George W. Bush signed into law the NASA Authorization Act of 2008, a policy bill that endorses U.S. plans to return to the moon. It sets a budget target for NASA programs and requires the agency to conduct an additional space shuttle flight to deliver a multi-billion dollar science payload to the International Space Station. Sounds like we might be making a stop before we get to the moon. Jump from the surface up to the space station, refuel, retool, maybe even add staff, and then off to the moon. It's going to be a race, people. Why? Do you think, and we're going to leave the phone lines open all night tonight, do you think that the moon is some gray, wasted, chilly wasteland of nothing but NASA ego for us to go back to? Oh, we'll beat the Chinese. Oh, we'll beat the Russians. You think that's what it's all about? Or do you think there are resources on the moon that we could use here on Earth? One such resource is H3. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight if you like. Our phone lines will be open all night, 888-228-4494, anywhere in the U.S., 877-489-6350, anywhere in Canada, and anywhere else, on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154. You people that have free long distance at night and free weekends, pick up the cell phone and give us a call. If you're using Skype, we didn't leave you out. Just simply use BBS Radio. Pal Talk, almost the same thing. BBS Radio_com. And don't forget to use your magic, Jack. You can reach us at all those numbers up above. We are coming to you live on the BBS Radio Network and also rebroadcasting at the same time over the Steel Eye Media Network. And I want to let you know, if you think you have what it takes. I've always had a dream of settling in behind a microphone on a regular basis and talking to the world. BBS Radio, the largest, clearly the largest, paranormal internet talk radio network in the world, is looking for hosts. If you think you can keep it together for an hour on a regular basis, Mondays through Sundays, get a hold of us at bbsradio.com. People of the Deep South love a good story, and they're about to get a doozy. It begins next week when researchers from 25 countries converge on Huntsville, Alabama, to share the latest findings on the biggest explosions since the Big Bang itself. The sixth Huntsville Gamma Ray Burst Symposium 2008 convenes October 20th, and the talking won't stop for four straight days. The symposium kicks off with a lecture for non-specialists, Black Holes from Einstein to Gamma Ray Bursts, in which NASA astrophysicist Neil Gehrels describes how every gamma ray burst may herald the birth of a black hole. Gamma ray bursts were discovered in the 1960s during the Cold War. U.S. satellites keeping an eye out for Soviet nuclear testing detected intense bursts of gamma radiation. Well, the bursts weren't coming from the Soviet Union, however, but from space. It turns out there are two kinds of gamma ray bursts. Short, those are the ones less than 2 seconds in length. And long, of course, the ones longer than 2 seconds in length. The long ones are widely thought to be supernovas on steroids, cataclysmic explosions signaling the end of stars 50 to 100 times more massive than the sun. When such a behemoth star explodes, it leaves behind a black hole and beams the news across the cosmos on a wave of gamma rays. Now, it's interesting that those gamma photons, as they take off from that event across the cosmos through all kinds of gravitational fields around one heliosphere and then another to reach here, the Earth, in low orbit, and strike a detector. That photon didn't lose any energy or any information across that entire stretch of space. Now that is pretty amazing. I want you to apply your thought muscles to that tonight and give us a call. Our phone lines will be open all night tonight. November of this year, we are going to try to have a guest every single week, except possibly Thanksgiving weekend. And we have got some great guests coming up for you. We've got Robert Balval, the author of The Egypt Code. He is the author, the researcher, that introduced to the world the idea that the Great Pyramid was designed as an alignment tool with ancient Orion. And the Orion Code, which he broke to the world, much to the chagrin of those who thought they had a franchise on the pyramids, has continued to grow in technological proof, in the robustness of his theory, and he is coming on the program in November. We're going to talk for 3 hours about that, and we will talk about it, about the pyramids, where they came from, who built them, why they were built, in our second hour. In this hour, I want to cover a little bit of news, a news item that actually came to me 9 times by email, and I suspect it came to many of you as well. It was an event that was supposed to have occurred October 14th. That's right, 5 days ago. There was supposed to have been a large UFO appear over the skies of Alabama. Well, it is now the 19th, and I have to tell you, the jury was out for me. I wasn't going to say one way or the other. Channelers come and go, and they try to make their mark. We did our best to try to get Miss Blossom Goodchild to come on the program. No luck making any contact before the 14th to try to understand the credibility, the build-up, the message, the idea that multiple races were going to get into a single craft, come to the Earth, not make contact, just appear and be not just oblivious to our situation here on this planet, but obvious and daring and immune to any retaliation from Earth, just to prove, according to her words, that there were galactic races who were concerned about the way we treat our planet, and maybe possibly the way we treat each other. And to reassure us that we are part of a galactic community, either errant or thrown out stepchildren or descendants or lost travelers, I want to discuss that this hour. The question has come up, and it's a good one. It's a question that many of you ask yourselves in the privacy of your own home, maybe not around your friends, maybe not at work. Maybe you want to be thought of as one who absolutely believes that UFOs are real, that there are other races out there who are not only interested in the Earth, but they come to the Earth, and maybe even possibly ancient races who have lived upon the Earth and have somehow withdrawn from society and are immensely advanced in their special craft that seem to blink in and out of existence, that enjoy or at least have mastered the art of plasma propulsion so that they can make left-hand turns at 10,000 miles an hour and fly around in 500-foot-long craft, much to the frustration of speeding F-16s who try to catch them like trying to catch their own shadows. On the other hand, maybe you're one of the ones that when you get to the privacy of your own home, you're saying, you know, it's been 61 years since Roswell, since the crash, since the retrieval, since the cult began. And then with the advent of cable TV and the idea that the paranormal through various channels and those numbers of channels have grown, discovery and history and science and on and on and on, the word got out that Roswell had happened, and more people began to become aware of it. And, coincidentally, the sightings went up, the testimonies went up, and the conspiracy theories went up as well. Everything you can think of, cattle mutilations, abductees, governments who have craft and have reverse engineered them into weapons, into communication systems, into night vision systems, on and on and on. I'm not skeptical. I'm a scientist. And like you, after 61 years,
we have a caller.
I would like to see something, a grain of salt, a lock of hair. We shall discuss this in depth this hour. We have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
How you doing, Dr. Agnes? It's Ramon from New York.
Hi, Ramon. Welcome to the program.
How you doing? I have to say that I was disappointed, but I should have not been disappointed. I was definitely disappointed on October the 14th, and then I said, maybe they're covering or something, and nothing. There was a bunch of fake news on YouTube about it, and I went on and checked CNN and checked everything. And
Well, I expected to see the mainstream media just go on with its ordinary day, but I expected to see the paranormal media going something like, Kraft shows up over Alabama, government denies existence, six witnesses confirm the arrival of the Kraft. I expected to see something like that, but even that was missing.
Yeah. I almost feel bad for her because she went on YouTube and said, I don't understand why they didn't show up. I don't have an explanation. And she apologized. By looking at her body language, I can see that she really did believe it. And she's probably way more disappointed than any of us with it are.
Well, isn't that in itself a little even more worrisome than if, she'd have just tossed up her hands and said, oh, well, and this hour, I don't want to talk about, Blossom Goodchild. I want to talk about the whole idea of channeling off-world intelligences. And I'm not coming to the table empty-handed here. I mean, I've had my own experience as well. However, maybe it's just because of my career, I'm not willing to go on national media and tell everyone what my experience was. And I imagine I'm not alone in that. And maybe it wasn't my responsibility to do that. Maybe it was something just for me. And on the other hand, it's possible and quite probable that our own consciousness can manifest the appearance or non-appearance. If there are a lot of doubters up there going, oh, for crying out loud, this is never going to happen. Well, guess what? It's never going to happen. So maybe Blossom was trying to get everyone aware, to get everyone to think about that day, and maybe that joint effort of all those consciousnesses would work like a beacon to call in an appearance like that, a manifestation like that. Do you think that's possible?
I definitely think it's possible. But at the same time, as I've heard you say, and I think myself, that it was definitely probably way too much information. And when you want to use intuition, you just want to put it out there and let it go, not put a whole bunch of stuff behind it.
You know, that's really interesting. We were having an intellectual discussion the other night, and the subject that came up, we were talking about meditation and manifestation, and not just the metaphysical part of it, but the actual science of it. And what we realized was the power in meditation, the power in manifestation, really comes in the exhale. It doesn't come in the inhale and holding your breath and grunting like you're lifting a barbell or something. It comes, just like you just said, in the exhale, in the letting it go, in putting the energy out there like dropping a pebble in the water, and then not running your hand over the surface of the water as the ripple goes out to the other side, but letting it go. And maybe that's what wasn't done. Maybe that's the lesson that we learned. On the other hand, don't you think it's a little bit like crying wolf? After the people hear this so many times, and maybe this was the straw that broke the camel's back, who knows? After a while, everyone's going to say, oh, gosh, not another, Blossom Goodchild. And then it turned out to be the real thing.
That could definitely happen. And I definitely believe that will happen in our lifetime. But it's one of those things that is left to speculation.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, as far as channeling, I've had my own experience, but I think it's kind of the same as if I was to tell you something, you can't take what I say without me showing you any kind of proof. So it's kind of the same thing with channeling. I definitely believe there's some kind of entity or something getting in touch with you, but I can't take everything they say as truth.
I couldn't agree more. I've heard it all. In 61 years since Roswell, we have heard, tears and absolute lie detector proof testimony that, you know, Kraft have appeared and Kraft, you know, took my pet cat and I sailed around the galaxy on a ship and came back. I've heard it. And I've seen, I don't know how many thousands of blurry photographs and blurry videos and night videos. Where is a piece of metal, a gear, a sprocket, a wire, a connector, a lock of hair? One single molecule of evidence. That's what we're looking for.
Well, from the I've never seen one personally, but from the documentary, I can't remember. There's a documentary on Billy Meyer from the, I think, the 70s. And
I saw it.
Did you see it?
Yes, and I've got to say, the 8mm film, not video, but film, is absolutely stunning. And if it is a special effect, it's darn well done.
And he's wasting his time doing that instead of doing Hollywood, right?
Yeah, but then you listen or you speak to the Billy Meyer people, and they will tell you that all other UFO sightings are false, and only theirs are the genuine ones. We had James Gilliland on the program a couple of weeks ago. I've been to his ranch. I have seen Kraft at his place up in the sky, as have thousands of people that have gone there. It's the hottest UFO place in the country, beyond any doubt. But Billy Meyer's people will say that that's all fake, that can't possibly exist, because the Meyer Foundation has a franchise on UFOs visiting the Earth. Well, I think that's nonsense. That's my own personal opinion. But that's what kind of draws me away from even the most credible evidence. Doesn't it, you?
To me, it sounds like it could be manipulation.
Sure.
From either elite part or even the aliens themselves.
Well, that could be too.
Because the one thing that I feel like people fail to see is like, hey, we have aliens. They're not going to bring us salvation. They're not going to bring us things we are missing from our lives. Only we can do that. What they are going to do is prove that there is life outside of Earth, that we're not alone, that there's technologies that we have no idea how they work. But they're not going to do anything for us personally as far as solving our problems, but proving that there is a higher being or anything like that. They're going to have their own truths and their own belief systems. Just like if a Japanese person tells you, well, this is the way it is, then you're not going to take that side.
Well, you may have a really good point there, that you know, maybe they feel as though we don't have anything to offer them, so why trade with us at all? Which makes Roswell such a different kind of interaction between Earth dwellers and dwellers on other planets, because the Roswell incident was a mistake. It was a crash. It was something went wrong. Either they were, you know, flew into a radar field, or they bumped into each other or something, but it was a crash and a retrieval. It wasn't an on-purpose landing. So it makes Roswell quite different than the others. And I've talked to Tom Carey and Don Schmidt at length, and I honestly believe that those two men have held on to that story so long and have vetted so many witnesses and so much evidence that they truly are very, very close to getting that government warehouse opened and getting exactly what we're asking for on this program. The junk. The pieces that came from that crash 61 years ago.
I don't know, Brooke. I'm skeptical. Not skeptical is the wrong word. I don't feel that they're close, only because what would be in that warehouse, if it is there, it's even to this date, 60 years later, it's still way more than what we have now. And it could be very dangerous in the wrong hands.
You have a good point. I mean,
and also that
they may never declassify it.
Yeah, that's also the ace in the hole for the American military. And I wouldn't want to show that card unless I really had to.
Well, that's a very good point. And if that technology does exist, and it's given us the ability to make high inertia maneuvers in the sky without smashing the pilot up against the driver's side window, and we're not using it, and we're not displaying it, or even more ludicrous, strapping 8 intelligent human beings to a rocket and lighting it and launching them straight up into space when we have higher technology, the ability to visit the moon at will, why carry on the charade? Who is winning that game?
That's a good
question. Yeah, I mean, what do they have to lose?
What's the gentleman's name from England that the American government wants him? They want to extradite him from England.
The guy that broke into that hacked their website, hacked their database.
Yeah,
and I'd like to get him on the program. I'd like to know what it is he learned, but he says he hasn't revealed anything.
Well, I did see some things on YouTube where you said that he found the black astronauts. Meaning that they're the ones, you have your regular astronauts that you know about, and then you have your astronauts that do the real work, deliver Mars and the moon.
That's pretty interesting. Well, so if they expedite him over here, do you think they'll put him on the stand and make it a public hearing, or do you think he'll never hear from the guy again?
I've never heard anything about that outside of YouTube and American news. Let me hear that on either BBC or European news. But I've never heard anything about it on American news.
If he knows he's going to be expedited, and he knows he's facing, life in prison or whatever, why not dump everything that he's discovered right on the Internet? Just blast it out there.
Well, from what I saw on the YouTube video, he never made copy of it. He just saw it. Which that part makes no sense, because if I was to find evidence like this, I wanted to copy of it. I don't know what it is. And they're out.
That's what I'd be doing.
If you're going to use the word screw me up like that, then I might as well dump everything.
Yeah, if he actually found what he said he saw, I would be throwing thumb drives into the side of my computer as fast as I could get them there, and I'd be making copies of it, because that would be my little blue dress. And like our famous presidential mistress, it might just save his life.
Yeah. As far as October 14th, when I called up a couple of weeks ago and I spoke to you and James, I was asking to see if he knew anything. Maybe they had.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, and when he said he haven't heard anything as far as like from them about it, then I was starting to get a little skeptical.
Well, me too. I mean, those that are in the know as far as UFO activities, it is a little strange that somebody would come out of the sidelines and say, I am announcing global first contact. And that may be how it happens. Who knows? On the other hand, they might just show up, just like they did in Independence Day. although that was a movie, right?
Yeah. Well, did you ever hear about, I'm sure you've seen the movie, When the Earth Stood Still?
I saw the old version of it, and I am anxiously awaiting the Keanu Reeves version.
They had said that the old version of it supposedly did happen to a certain degree. It's a rumor I always heard on the internet.
Makes it even more interesting. Ramon, I have a caller on the other line. If you want to hang out.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Ramon. Call back at any time. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
My first name is Gary, and I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Well, welcome to the program, Jerry.
No, Gary, G-A-R-Y.
Okay, Gary, I got you.
So I just wanted to know if anyone has been to that opening in the earth and back to, and really proven that there is an opening there?
That's a great question. We have set a date, August 17th, 2009, for the expedition. We have open negotiations with a joint venture with the charter company. The charter company does a polar cruise four times a year. They take people to the North Pole. And the ship that they charter is the same ship that we want to utilize. And so we went to them and we offered them a partnership, a joint venture, to do the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. And they agreed. So we are well on our way, my friend. And next summer, we are going to do the greatest expedition in the history of the world.
That is great. Hasn't there anyone who has done like a flyby over in that region and has been able to see the opening by air? No?
The last guy was in 1926, and his name was Admiral Byrd.
Wow. I mean, our technology today should be able to show us a true geographical representation of the Earth, right? And I can't believe in this day and age we haven't been able to locate that hollow in the Earth's surface at both the North and South Pole. That's kind of weird to me, because all these maps you see on the internet, they show, you know, the country we know of today, like the United States and stuff like that, but they never show, you know, that hole or that opening in the Earth's crust.
Well, if you're talking about Google Earth, everything above the 60th parallel on Google Earth is animated. That satellite cannot see above the 60th parallel. Everything above the 60th parallel is animated. It isn't real. There are no publicly available images of the North or South Pole from satellites. That is, it's a law. It's called the Data Denial Act. It was put in place in February of 2006. However, we do have a lot of evidence from space. We do have X-ray photography, we have infrared photography, and we have some what's called incidental or oblique angle visible photography, and it does show an anomaly. It's very, very rare to get a cloud-free view of the North Pole with visible light, but we have got it with infrared, and it does show a very bright, hot infrared signature right exactly where we have determined to go with our ship. As for flying over it, we tried for over a year to charter a jet to make this trip. The only jet that we could charter was a 727. The flight, albeit short, the cheapest that we could get it was $63,000 for a flyby And the lowest that they would fly was 25,000 feet. We wouldn't be able to see a thing.
Okay. Well, I think you've answered all my questions, and I thank you very much for your responses, and I wish you guys the best on your trip to that location when it comes.
I appreciate that, Gary. I know you'll be out there watching along with millions of other people around the world as we broadcast live from the deck of the ship. What we see, you will see. I promise you that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Gary.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Well, so there you have it. We have curiosity. We have an intense exploring heart around the world. And many of you listen to X Squared Radio. You tell your friends to listen to X Squared Radio. We are live for 3 hours every Sunday night between 8 and 11 Eastern, 5 and 8 Pacific. And then we immediately put these up on the archives. And if you want to subscribe to X Squared Radio Archives, you can get this great sound quality. We do this at 128 density, which is really, really good sound quality. Now, if you have a dial-up, it's going to be very difficult to listen, but if you have DSL or cable or satellite, you're going to be able to listen just fine. We have been on since 2005, and that puts us in the neighborhood of about 160 hours of listening expertise out there. We do have many of the best authorities in the world on this subject. We have Stanton Friedman. We have Nick Pope. We have Tom Carey, Don Schmidt. We've got the best UFO investigators of all time have been and are coming on X Squared Radio. We ask questions from a scientific point of view. I did not come from the broadcast theater. I am primarily a scientist, and through interviews, which were subsequent to the writing of a series of books, I was offered a host position here at BBS Radio, and you can too, just by going to bbsradio.com. Sign up as a host and see if you have what it takes to ask the tough questions. We have another caller. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Kersana. I'm calling from Montana.
All right. Montana, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really nice up here.
Yes, we love
and I called
Montana.
About, pardon me?
I said we love Montana.
Yeah, I do too. That's why I'm here. And what I called about is the October 14th prediction for a sighting. And I'd like to propose a theory. And hear
okay.
what you have to say about it. Well, like you, I've had my own experiences, and I have heard, I think, everything. I am not a channel. I've talked to many, many channels, and there are some channels that I know are really channeling. I mean, they're really getting communication from someone because I will run in, especially the Ashtar Command, and I will run into different people from the Ashtar Command who do not know each other, who have never talked to each other, and they'll tell me just about the same story. And it's contemporary. It's not old news. So it seems to me that there is some communication process occurring, and that one of the things that seems to be really important in these contacts is the subject of faith and belief. And that I think that sometimes these channels will be truly be given information depending on what that channel wants to hear and is able to hear, and that the objective is not to make a landing, but actually to break down a little bit of faith and belief that a landing is going, that some ET intervention is going to save us. In my own experiences, my own contacts, I've been told that the problems that we are having are created in the mind of man, and they must be solved in the mind of man. And so a lot of these prophecies and promises are basically what the channel wants to hear, needs to hear, and there's no intention, really, of making it happen. And as an example, I will give, if you will recall, in 1998, there was a big scuttlebutt about a UFO landing outside of Phoenix. You remember that? And I remember all the people, I mean, it was on, people were on, Dick Hoagland was talking about it. There were just a number of people talking about it. And at that time, as soon as I have my own list, and a lot of people are on my list and will write about these things as they did on the October 14th scene. And my first reaction was, anyone who thinks a UFO is going to land outside of Phoenix is out of their mind. It's not going to happen. It will not happen. And I cannot believe these people who are normally rational humans are out spitting this out on national radio. And, of course, it didn't happen. But I will tell you what did happen on my end on that, and that is my own contacts. I didn't even bother to ask, is this for real? I knew it wasn't. And I asked, my contacts asked me, don't you want to know what's going to happen in Phoenix? I said, are you kidding? We've been through this. I know. There's nothing happening out there. And they said, well, not at Phoenix, but we will make some sightings that night. And that night, which was December, about the 8th, thereabouts, 10th, in 1998, there were large sightings over Georgia. So,
interesting.
What do you think?
Well, I definitely think that consciousness plays a role in this. In my own experience, I had never seen anything before. I'd always wanted to, but didn't really know how to prepare myself, or even if I was prepared. And I got to be honest, when it happened, I had a little bit of fear. It wasn't just a flyby. It wasn't just something that went, you know, way up high overhead. It came close, and I felt a little bit like, hey. I have nothing to hide under here. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I'm exposed. And I had some fear with it. And I got to tell you, when that wave of fear came over me, that craft instantly responded to my emotion and went the other way. It stopped, went back down in energy, and went the other way.
Right.
So I got to tell you that there is communication. And if they are making contact with you, then that communication is for you and you only. And
exactly.
I guess that's where I have a little bit of a problem, is instantly people will say, oh, gee, how can I make $1 million with this? And
right.
That's when I start running the other way, when I see people who are in the UFO business for money. That sort of sends the flag up for me. But when
right.
I see a life changed, I mean really
right.
profoundly changed, the level of mercy in that person, the level of love in that person change, and I know that person for a long, long time, then I got to say, something really happened.
Right. Well, what I'm addressing here, the actual point, is the incredible level of faith and belief that we as a society rely on many times in lieu of just simple objective observation. We're basically, it's not so much now, but I would say in 1947, we were essentially a faith-based society. I'm talking Judeo-Christian. And that definitely, the propensity for faith-based living is entirely a personal matter, and it's very easy to move that faith from a religion onto an ET or a mode of an ET. And that what I'm saying here is that ETA controls the number of contacts and the proximity of contacts. They are in control of that. That's really clear. Just by the history of the last 60 years. And to make a real open appearance right now would be, in my opinion, an absolute disaster.
Why do you say that?
Because we're not ready for it. You'd have people out, you know, dealing with devils or, or angels, because we just don't have it moved out of that faith-based mindset. That's the point I'm making.
Well, it's interesting when you go back and look at ancient history, though. You look at the Tibetans, you look at the Mayans, you look at the Eskimos, American Indians. And there's clearly interaction between off-worlders. You can see their ships. You can see the suits that the travelers wore. You can see their size relative to humans. You see their lessons written down, their star maps written down. You know, civilizations in the past had less of a problem with people from other worlds than we do today.
Absolutely. But we're dealing with today and not even 100 years ago or 500 years ago. Our society as it presently exists, I mean, you know, it's just very polarized, very faith-based. A lot of what we call Christianity now was really introduced in the 19th century. So
sure.
Pardon me?
I said, yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, modern Christianity is not what it used to be.
That's right, and so it is the social trend and the social thinking that has created Christianity as it exists today. And ET, I think, is really aware of that. And any public showing could be really traumatic to many, many people who, for whatever personal reason, rely on faith instead of direct observation, reasoning, and simple intelligence.
Well, it could be, but you know, we live in an information age, and I see more news stories on mainstream news about UFOs and the possibility of off-world visitations now than I ever have before, especially even in the last couple of years.
But the problem is that you still don't have a single piece of evidence. They're not giving it to us. They're not making landings. I mean, a landing at James Gilliland's ranch would be a piece of cake. All they have to do is land on the White House lawn.
They wouldn't do that. There's no intelligent life there.
That's right. And if you'll recall the activity over the White House in 1952, they could have landed right then and there. They didn't land. They didn't leave any physical evidence, but the Air Force could not deny that they were buzzing the White House from midnight to 6 a.m.
That's true.
So in this, pardon me?
I said that's exactly right. Krasana, if you want to hang through the break, you can. I've got about a four-minute break that I need to take right now. We're right at the top of the first hour. Why don't you stay with us for a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, okay?
Okay.
All right. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio coming to you live from Eastern Washington State. We'll be back after these messages, so don't go away. We have plenty more coming with X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of the Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They've come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio.
Life extends life.
This is where the past meets the future.
Life expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
In a formula where one times the other always gives a positive result. We're glad you're here. We couldn't be here without you. Eastern Washington State on a clear, crisp, cool night. Our AccuWindow forecast says it's about 46 degrees outside. And we're glad you're here. I've got Krisana from Montana on the line, and before we get back to her, I want to give you a couple pieces of information. Joel Estella with Green Star Products. Their website is greenstarusa.com. Check it out. It's got a link at the website at x2-radio.com. He has issued a national call to action. It'll be coming out as a video commercial and has been delivered to Washington. It is asking all Americans to drive the posted speed limit. This will have several effects, the first of which will be immediate, and that is saving 300,000 barrels a day of oil. Now, this is equivalent to half the production of the Alaska pipeline. That's profound. And he is saying this takes no new legislation. It takes no new investment. It is something you can do tomorrow morning. It will also have another effect, and that is to vastly reduce the amount of money that goes from the public to traffic court judges all over the country. Sounds like a good call to action. In my own diesel vehicle, I have a Cummins diesel pickup. I'm going to be putting the hydroxy injection onto it here shortly. This takes ordinary tap water and a teaspoon of sodium hydroxide and electricity and converts it into hydrogen and oxygen gas, injects it into the intake manifold of the diesel at the rate of about 2 liters per minute, increasing the horsepower, smoothing out the engine, and also increasing the fuel mileage. When I install this unit on the truck, I'll tell you who builds it, where to get it, how much it costs, and what my results are. So if you're interested in that and you drive a diesel, stay tuned to X Squared Radio over the next few weeks. We'll tell you how that comes out. Also, I want to let you know that we have finished our Christmas Ark of Millions of Years offer. It will be going up on the website tonight. It will be for a limited time, and we will limit it to only 500 orders. So if you're going to order the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy with the new covers, give it to a friend or give your old ones away and buy yourself a new set. You have a limited time to do this. We'll send all three books out together, and you will get the audio as a download for Volumes 1 and Volume 2, and we are working on Volume 3 as well. So that's about 1,500 pages, the most comprehensive work ever done on the 2012 End Times, and a bonus in Part 2 called Unlocking the Secret in Volume 3. So that will be going up tonight. Take advantage of it. It's only going to last a short amount of time. And we're happy with the results we've had so far. We've been in the top 1% of Amazon books for the last, well, since July 2nd. And we have been the number one authors with our publisher since July. Out of 20,305 authors, that book is number one. We appreciate it. And we're showing that appreciation by offering an incredible discount on all three books together. All right, Krisana, are you still there? Nope, Krisana with Montana. She's still there?
I'm here.
Ah, yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. We were talking about a phenomenon that seems to be linked together. If you'll just permit me about a 60-second monologue here. UFO interaction, whether it's abduction or a sighting or a landing or whatever, seems to be tied to the faith and the belief of the people involved. For some reason, there is communication between the beings that are flying the craft and we humans that are on the ground. And for some reason, even though we're 21st century, lightning-fast communicators, high intellect, very fast adapting people, evidently we're not ready for global first contact with a race from another world. And so that's what we'll talk about a little bit here. What do you think, Krisana? Are we ready for global first contact, or do you think, as the Brookings Institute once said, we would have complete social mayhem if another race were to really introduce themselves to us at this time?
I don't think we would have social mayhem, because if we were going to have social mayhem, just the evidence that already exists on the reality that UFOs do exist would have produced it. However, I'm talking about the reaction of individuals who, on a personal level, still have a need to have an external source of faith and trust, who have not themselves developed their own individuality and trust in their individuality, that they don't need some higher power to give them confidence in their own lives. And I think that the last 60 years, personally, have been a process of of bringing us to a point where we can move into another level in the way we relate to the world around us and to ourselves. That's what I think.
Well, that's a really good point. And I don't think I could agree more that somehow the sovereignty of the human soul seems to be subordinated to either other human souls or even a mysterious, all-powerful God who seems to be out there in the universe or has people convinced, or people have convinced one another that he is out there judging people. You go to heaven, you go to hell, I'm going to reserve judgment on until you change your ways. And then people don't realize that by our actions and the energy that we maintain by our thoughts, we already judge ourselves.
Exactly. And you don't get from the point where we were as a society in 1900 when new religions were just popping up almost daily. You don't get from that point to a collective of sovereign mind overnight. There's a process that gets you there. And I think part of what we're experiencing and why they sometimes do tell channels very deliberately things like we're going to make an appearance and then they don't show up is because there is nothing that will prick the faith of a channel faster than something like that. And maybe
well,
that's
true.
That channel needed was to
yep.
really come to terms with her ability to perceive reality on her own steam, in contrast to being told by an external force what was happening, as just a guess.
Well, that could very well be. Let me go back to your previous point. You said that at one time, at least in American history, it seemed like new religions were popping up daily. The reason that was happening is because the old religion, the old church structure, didn't cut it anymore. The people were becoming awakened. They were seeing that they were intricately tied with the consciousness of the universe. And the idea that there was an all-powerful church who could interpret scripture and thus God's mind for you wasn't going to cut it anymore. People wanted direct contact on their own, face to face, and they started getting it. And
right.
That's where
this
onslaught of religions came from. Well, now I think we're at the point where we don't want to listen to the Stanton Friedmans anymore. We don't want to listen to the Richard Hoaglands anymore. We want our own contact. We're ready, face to face, for our own. Yeah.
And we don't need where we're going in terms of sovereignty is just the ability to perceive the world through your own eyes without an interpreter telling you what to see.
There you go.
And that's my point. And
yes.
By the way, the revolution in religion actually started almost immediately after the Revolutionary War.
Sure.
And in the early 19th century, you just had spiritualism became a huge movement. There were a number of new religions that started developing right after the American Revolution. And by 1900, I mean, I don't have all my notes here, but we just had an onslaught of new religions. The Pentecostal Church is just one of them.
Actually, it was in the early 19th century, 1820s, 1830s. It was exploding. There was one revival after another just waved across the country. And what actually was happening was the ancient Templar prophecy of a New Jerusalem being formed on the American continent, a land where religious freedom would be the call of the day, had finally been fulfilled. The blood had been spilt. The Constitution had been established. The independence had been won.
Right.
And you're right. Within 50 years, the religious freedom that had been yearned after by race after race of human beings for millennia finally came to be. And we're still enjoying that religious awakening now in this country.
Well, I will tell you one comment that one of my ET contacts once made to me. I was cooking spaghetti. And he said, you know, you Americans have atrocious eating habits. But I'll give you credit for one thing. You're the first nation to rise to power without a state religion.
And isn't it great?
And if you look at it, if that's the truth, America was the first nation to rise to power without a state religion. And that was, of course, dictated in the Constitution. But I am going to tell you one thing. I don't know if you want to get off the line or not, but one thing that many people do not realize is that the Founding Fathers, for the most part, were not churchgoers. The data on that is the Smithsonian Institute from their diaries and letters. Many of them were deists. Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin studied with the Native Americans. And so when they sat down and agreed on a constitution, religion was not incorporated into it. Now, can you imagine what America would be like if they had adopted a national religion? Wouldn't be America as we know it. But then what happened is that as soon as the revolution was won around in the 1790s, in the first 40 years, you had famine in Ireland and Germany. And you had the Americans wanting new settlers. So you had a massive influx, millions of Irish and German in the first 40 years after the revolution. And many of these people were completely illiterate. The average newspaper at the time of the revolution in America was written at grade 17, and my source on that is the Smithsonian Institute. And then within 40 years, we had complete illiteracy, so that around 1826, illiteracy was declared a national emergency, and the McGuffey readers were written to begin the education of these millions of completely illiterate immigrants, many of whom had never even seen a book except the Bible. And it was these people and that generation that cobbled together this idea of Christian America, because the Founding Fathers didn't have that idea, and they were very literate people. So then from that movement, from the 1820s, when the McGuffey readers were introduced, to educate this wave of ignorant, totally illiterate immigrants, then the education of America began, and it achieved a pretty high literacy level in terms of maybe 12th grade instead of grade 17, until World War II. And it was right around 1940 in the late 30s that people began to question the McGuffey readers, which are just a beautiful piece of work. I don't know if you've ever looked at them. And then after the war, after World War II, the Cold War became the priority, and education has just taken a back seat. To this day, Bush's solution for education is No Child Left Behind, but what he left behind was the money. So Gore Vigel wrote an essay on this, and he said, the problem with the educational system in America after World War II is that we now have a couple of generations of adults who became teachers who are themselves not very literate. So how
that's
do you...
That's true.
Yeah, it's very true. So all of these factors, and I see this factor in America, as you were discussing, of the education and how this idea that it was a Christian nation took root was through complete illiterate immigrants.
Well, that's true.
Who made their money.
It was the charismatic movement and leadership of those personalities who came either as immigrants or came to power in this country, who had a mastery of the English language, not just, you know, could speak the language, but could master the language. And it was easy to sway the masses with that kind of command of the language. And so, you know, religion after religion came to power. And honestly, they've been wrestling for dominion in this country for 200 years. And I'm not really sure where it is, but although our founding fathers didn't choose a church per se, they did make repeated references to God, Allah, inalienable rights. And the Declaration of Independence, which was an unedited document written one time without a single redaction, is actually chapter 2 of the 1215 document, Magna Carta, which said basically the same thing, and that was drafted by Irish and Scots.
Well, there's quite a little leap here, because actually the Declaration of Independence, and I'm quoting from memory, refers specifically to the laws of nature and nature's God. And the concept of the Founding Fathers in that statement, who had studied with the Native Americans and had actually used the Iroquois Constitution as a model, is quite different than what you get from some Irish immigrant who's never seen a book before.
Well, that's true, but Thomas Jefferson's wording of his actual Declaration of Independence is very similar to the wording that was used in the Magna Carta. Freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom to own property, those kinds of things.
That's true, but I understand, and I think you can look this up, you can do some fact-checking on it, that the opening sentence, "we, the people," was taken right out of the Iroquois Constitution.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So anyway, I should probably go so you can let some other people get on the line. But I just really, every time I see one of these big expectant waves of UFOs, you know, this expectancy that this UFO is going to just come and prove to us their truth, that the kind is just, I'm at the point now where it's like, oh, not again, you know, because the kindest thing to do isn't to prove their truth, but to provide a way or to lead us into a way to find our own truth.
Well, that's exactly right. To teach us to have confidence in our own sovereignty, and to take command of our own life instead of relinquishing that to some other power or dominion, and thus not take any responsibility, any blame, or any credit for our life condition.
Exactly. So, thank you. I listen to you all the time. Every Sunday night I sew and listen to you.
Well, I am so flattered. I can't tell you how valuable that is for me to know that. And now I have a vision of Krisana in Montana, sitting there listening while I'm behind this microphone in an office in eastern Washington State. And as I said, this might be our...
I pull out my sewing and sew every week. Slowly, my granddaughter will be clothed.
That's fantastic. Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on the program.
Well, thank you.
You're
bye-bye.
Very welcome. Bye-bye. And so, you know, that kind of finishes off our first hour of X Squared Radio. We had been talking about generally what has been considered the UFO fad. Is it real? Since 1947, it has become more than popular. It has become practically an information frenzy about the possibility that we are being visited from intelligences from other worlds, or even from past or future civilizations of this world. And I don't want to reduce your faith or your hope, as it were, in something very real happening here on this planet with our civilization. It is very clear as we look through history, whether it's medieval art or Mayan construction or archaeology, whether it's Egyptian or Tibetan, that there has been interaction from intelligences from beyond. And it's difficult to say whether that is another dimension or whether it is another planet. It is difficult to say. I don't want to take away from any of that. But paintings and likenesses and carvings and star charts going back as far as the worshippers of Baal or Babylonian cylinders 5,000 years old, mapping out planetary systems that we did not discover until the early 60s with our powerful telescopes and satellites, and even the numbering system of planets that don't start with the sun, but rather start with Pluto and work their way in, as though a traveler had come from beyond to here and witnessed or seen our life condition from outside in. All of that is wonderful, and I'm not taking away from any of that. Lord knows there's enough evidence in our own 1,500-plus pages in the arc of millions of years that we have, in fact, had this interaction, and we have had an exchange of at least ideas. And from time to time, in points of low morale or low technology, maybe on the brink of extinction or loss of the human purpose as a soul carrier of God himself, we have found ourselves without help, without lessons, without guidance, without engineering, without animal husbandry or the ability to purify a single drop of water, that these beings have arrived. Small groups and sometimes significant visitations to teach and to shape and to bless and to help and to leave a record behind that something amazing has happened. Some interaction, teacher to student, prophet, seers, revelators, whatever you want to call them, the shining ones, come to this world to teach us how to live with, and maybe even for, our own planet. Bright blue jewel in the middle of empty space that it is. To deny any of that would be intellectually irresponsible, I think. But it is legitimate, and it is at least a call to curiosity that we get up from the ground from time to time. We approach the lectern from time to time. And we as a people, we as a race, we as individual sovereign intelligences reaching out into the dark cosmos beyond the twinkling stars with our imaginations, with our telescopes, with our ham radios, with whatever imagination we have to say, wait a minute, can't we have a shard of the crystal? Can't we at least run our hands over the smooth skin of a craft? Can't we shake a hand or hear a voice? Can't we have something? A flower, a rock, a piece of fabric, a button, anything, a shoe latchet, as it were. Just not that we're seekers of signs or that we're doubters, but at some point, intelligent beings have to say, Where is the evidence? Where is the hard evidence of existence of these other races? It can't just be us in this universe. It's not possible. The odds against it are beyond calculation, beyond denial. It must be there. They must be there. So if that is the case, then we have to ask ourselves the question. No matter where we live, Kansas, Florida, Australia, New Zealand, England, the oldest cultures on the planet will ask this question. Are we alone? When we look up in the sky and we see a craft flying across the night sky, or the day sky for that matter, and we realize that's not from around here. That's not our neighborhood stuff up there in the sky. Whose is it? Won't you just stop and say hello? As we mount this expedition, and I did want to remind you, if you weren't listening in the first hour, we have opened negotiations for a joint venture with the charter company that runs the Russian icebreaker. And that has gone very well, much better than I expected, I can tell you. I honestly did not think that they would be open-minded at all, but they are more than open-minded. They're ready to participate. And we have, in essence, raised half the money, almost $800,000 worth of value toward this expedition. So the greatest expedition in the history of the world, on the world, that is, I would say the expedition to the moon in the 60s was the greatest expedition that we've ever undertaken, given the technology that was applied at the time. But I can't go to the moon, and I certainly can't go to Mars, but I can go to the Arctic Circle. That we can do. And it surprises me that it's never been done before. It surprises many, even callers of this program, writers of this program, and even people that have published stories about it. Why has no one been there? It's not an easy thing to do. It is extremely inhospitable, and it is not something that you just jump into a sailing vessel and take off up there. My own ancestors did that. Sir James Ross almost lost his life twice and did lose the life of many crewmen as he sailed the Arctic Circle looking for the magnetic North Pole. Finally found it in 1831 and is credited with locating it, being the first to locate it. And now, here I am, a great-great-grandson, trying to repeat the expedition, this time by finding that ever-elusive, what has been called an oceanic depression, what has been called an opening into the inner Earth, what has been called the opening to the hollow Earth, what has been called the point of origin for the aurora borealis, the energy that oozes out of the core of the Earth and provides us this amazing magnetosphere that keeps us alive on the surface of our world, which is very unique in the universe. Most civilizations have to live in the interior of their world because the surface is just too radiologically inhospitable for biological life. Here we are. Envy of this part of the galaxy, ready to find what people have called Shambhala, a dimensional opening, a region of consciousness heretofore inaccessible by those third-dimensional minds with their instruments and their disbelief and their low consciousness, unable to find the elusive opening. Speak, friend, and enter, as it were. here we are, the explorers, putting together the most impossible expedition. And it is going to take place, and you are coming with us. We will be broadcasting live from the surface of the ship over the net as much as we can. We're going to have four cameras in that network, so one or more of those cameras will be on screen all the time. You'll get to see what we see, and we're not going to hold anything back. This is an expedition of discovery on a level heretofore unknown, because most expeditions of this kind are edited, are redacted, and all you hear are rumors. This will be no rumor. This will be first person. You will be there with us. And as the film, and we intend on recording at least 3,000 hours of film, digital film, during the 15 to 18 day expedition. And that 3,000 hours of film will be digested into a series of documentaries. And those of you who are new to X Squared Radio may not know that about 18 months ago we aired a pilot program in the Genes of Galileo contest for the Nippon Television Network in Japan, the number one television network in Japan 5 years in a row, aired a 15-minute version of the Inner Earth Expedition Part 1 video, which is for sale if you want to buy it. It's at the online store at x2-radio.com. It's pretty good. Even as an amateur film, it raises the bar for amateur films. It's a documentary on the Hollow Earth, and it's pretty well done. Pretty well narrated, pretty well put together. The animations are very clear. You will understand Hollow Earth theory in the 31 minutes of that film, and you'll get to see things that no one in the West has ever seen before. Things buried in the archives in Tibet that no Westerner has seen since 1959, built in the 7th century in the bowels of the Patala in Tibet. We put it on there for you, in video and also in photographs, so that you can see for yourself how these ancient civilizations believe they are tied into the earth and the consciousness and the beings in the universe more than you can imagine. It is at the core of Tibetan Buddhism. So here we are, wildly curious, absolutely not knowing that we cannot do this. And these five films, when they are put out, are going to be feature films. They're going to go into the theaters first. When we come out of the theaters, they'll be in the form of DVDs. But here's what happened in Japan. 17 million Japanese watched that 15-minute pilot and voted it number one, the winner of the Genes of Galileo contest. And it was much heralded. It was much anticipated. Our producer won many awards in Japan because of that documentary. Now, if the Japanese people are interested in the opening to the Hollow Earth or the possibility that planets form as hollow balls, not from a religious standpoint, not from a metaphysical standpoint, I mean from a cosmological standpoint. It makes logical sense that planets form as hollow balls and not as solid, molten globules in space. We explain it pretty carefully in the film. And now we're going to do the experimental data. We are going aboard a craft to this area with 100 scientists from many universities. If you're out there and you have a copy of Geological Society of America magazine, October issue, make sure to look up the ad in there for the 2009 Arctic Expedition. Submit an abstract to us and let us know what kind of experiments and measurements you would like to make about the Arctic Circle, and maybe you can join our expedition as a scientific contributor. Now, you universities, we realize it is, at least from a budget standpoint, absolutely impossible possible that you could raise enough money to send two or three people to the Arctic Circle for 18 days. It's just not possible. Even if you went by dog sled, no one would put a PhD undergrad or a grad student at that kind of risk. For one thing, it would be far too expensive, and the liability would be horrendous. This is the perfect opportunity. In fact, it's the only opportunity that your school will ever have to go to this region. For the amount of money that it will take to send two or three of your students on a possible Nobel path above the Arctic Circle on a ship with a crew and a staff that's capable of bringing back the evidence that you need to make a statement or change a paradigm about plate tectonic theory or about Arctic tectonics or about the sea floor or sea chemistry or sea life, marine biology, oceanography, planetary core geology. This is the opportunity of a lifetime. Your university, whether you're Stanford or Harvard or Washington University or NC State, you have a chance. 100 seats. That's it. Two or three individuals can join this expedition, bring their own experiment on board, get to the geological area or the oceanographic area, and take samples that cannot be taken any other way. Don't let your students get their PhDs from an armchair. Let's take them to a place no one, no living being on Earth has ever seen what we're about to see. It has been covered in ice for over 200,000 years. And now we are going to a place that has never been seen by human eyes. You might be able to drop a cable to the bottom of the sea, 4,400 meters to the bottom, and take a sample of fossils that came from inside the planet and have strewn themselves across the ocean floor, never before seen, because no one has ever seen this portion of the planet. Yes, we're going to see ice, and we're going to see whales, and we're going to see a sun low in the sky, and maybe no nighttime for 15 days. But you're going to be in the right place at the right time with the right people. And you might observe something completely beyond your imagination. To be there, the first, the only observers of what we are going to see, is priceless. And you students out there, you faculty that have students or staff, go to work Monday morning, October 20th. Turn on the archive to X Squared Radio. Slide on your headphones and realize that you have the chance to go. Please make the contact. Go to NPIEE.org, North Pole Inner Earth Expedition.org, NIPI.org, or go to Phoenix Science Foundation, click on the APEX, that's Advanced Planetary Explorations tab, and learn about the expedition and see if you have what it takes. This will not be an easy trip, I can tell you that. It will be cold, it will be windy, there will be seasickness. It will be tough. It is not for the lighthearted. It is not a tourist trip. This is a scientific expedition to discover something about our planet that has been imagined for over 6,000 years. It's about time we had some proof, one way or the other. So quit sitting around in your cubicle and take action. get a hold of your university and see if you can't get a few seats on this expedition. Contact us. Get your copy of GSA, Geological Society of America, look up the ad, and submit an abstract. Or go to the website, either NIPI.org or PhoenixScienceFoundation.org. And if you can't remember that, just put in Hollow Earth Expedition, and you'll find us. There is only one. And there's only one chance to make it. We're leaving August 19th, 2009, with you or without you. You can read about it in the papers, or you can buy the video, or you can participate in it. Come on. Breathe that Arctic air with us. In our next hour, I want to definitely get into the two things. One is energy and our response to the floating cost of living. There's some things you need to understand about it. As we approach the end of the year, this is actually the beginning of the fiscal year as far as business goes. October is the turning point for it. But as we approach our next year, I want you to have some strategies in mind, not just for investment, but also in how you consume energy and how you think about energy. Because this next presidency is going to have some surprises for you. Some surprises. I don't want you to learn about it while listening to a political show. You need to hear about it listening to a scientific talk radio program. That's what X-Squared Radio is all about. And the other thing we want to discuss is something we covered in a chapter called The Watchers in Volume 2, which was 2012, and The Harvest of the End Times, which was Volume 2 of The Ark of Millions of Years. And that is the economy and the unified money system. I know you haven't heard that before. You've heard of it called One World Government, but I'm just talking about a unified money system. It's not what you think. It's not what you think. So we want you to tune in. Hour three. It's going to start in about 6 minutes. If you want to grab you a microwave pizza, it's just about long enough to get that thing ready to sit down and listen to the third hour. No conspiracies, just economic observations and pure science. And a little bit of history thrown into it. History is a great teacher. We use it throughout the arc of millions of years, tapping into every major civilization that has lived on this earth, not even leaving out Atlantis and the Lemurians. So as we finish up this hour, remember that we have a Christmas offer for the Ark of Millions of Years. These are three books which Forward Magazine called the most comprehensive books ever written on the creation and destiny of the earth. They are the end times books. They have been prophesied to come forth for many hundreds of years, most recently in the early 19th century. Then in the last days, there would be a compilation from ancient manuscripts, which were absolutely unavailable until 15 years ago, unless, of course, you spoke ancient Sumerian. Now, all of these works, 44 of them, have been put together in a comprehensive work, leaving nothing out except one thing. We did not go into the hollow earth that deeply. We took a lot of professional risks with the books, 1,500 pages, easily read, and if you don't like reading, don't worry about it. I read it for you. If you buy this series, I will give you the audio to the first two books as a download, and you can listen to it while you drive and while the books remain unharmed on your library shelf. But this is a series of books that will excite your mind and will definitely open your paradigms to something greater for the human race and the human being, you as an individual. That offer is going to go up tonight at arkofmillionsofyears.com. That's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark. That's what he called his Ark, the Ark of Millions of Years. It's going to go up there tonight. You will be able to buy all three volumes as a packaged set for a remarkably low price, but we are limiting the offer. Only 500 sets. That's it. They will go fast, people. They will be gone in a few days. The covers have been redone. They'll all be autographed. It's a lifetime treasure. Don't wait and get it at Barnes & Noble at the store because they're expensive. But we're going to send them out to you. Only 500, and this is a Christmas offer at arkofmillionsofyears.com. And don't forget, Joe LaStella, President and CEO of Green Star Products. Their website is greenstarusa.com. He's a world record holder with electric vehicles, with high mileage vehicles, and his company currently is a leader in algae or biodiesel, an extremely credible figure in the world of new energy, has a call to action. He is asking every American, drive the posted speed limit. Leave a little bit earlier if you have to, but this will save 300,000 barrels of oil a day. Every day that we do this, that is half the production of the Alaska pipeline. Half the production of the Alaska pipeline. And it brings us one step closer to energy independence. It requires no new legislation. It requires no investment. It is something we can do today. Stay tuned with us. We'll be back in about 4.5 minutes with the third and final hour, X Squared Radio. I'm Brooks Agnew, your host. We'll be back after these messages. Friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X
Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, and this may be the final broadcast from this part of the country. We are completing our project up here, a brand new 8 million gallon a year biodiesel facility. This facility is unique in that it changes canola oil into biodiesel direct. And it creates jobs for this area, and it is, of course, clean burning and economical for the farmers in the area. And then we're going to be moving on to St. Louis for a new facility. This new facility is kind of neat. It has three complexes to it. One, of course, is the biorefinery, which converts the soybean or canola oil or algae oil into biodiesel. The second is an algae farm, which raises and processes about 1,000 gallons a minute of algae water into algae oil at the rate of about 3,000 and 6,000 gallons per acre per year. And this is also clean burning, doesn't impact any crops or food. In fact, it generates food, it generates oxygen, and it will lower the cost and stabilize the cost of feedstock to the biodiesel industry. It is the first of its kind, not only in the United States, but in the world. And the third part of the complex will take green waste and convert it directly into electricity, providing the heat and electricity for the complex, and also providing a cellulosic source for bacteria, which will produce ethanol. The ethanol combined with the algae oil in an esterification process is what creates the biodiesel, making it possible to stop the process of drilling for oil to make diesel fuel and simply grow the diesel fuel, creating jobs, creating energy independence, cleaning up the atmosphere, corrupting the greenhouse gas imbalance. So it's a good project. First of its kind in the country. You want to learn about it, go to greenstarusa.com. TVT, Total Vehicle Technology. You heard the ad just a few minutes ago.
TVT 24/7 is the engine oil energizer that is marketed on our online store. And we have an open call for TVT stories, customers that buy TVT products. And we've had a couple of good ones, and I have one today. They bought the TVT cutting oil. This oil is poured into the water-based lubricant that is used in tool shops using CNC lathes. And as you know, they're cutting sometimes hardened materials that the taps and dies and cutting tools and grinding tools wear out, and they wear out pretty quickly, especially if they're processing hard metals. And the equipment uses quite a bit of amperage trying to drive the drill bit and the tap through that steel. And the loss of tools and the loss of amps and the noise and the inherent biological souring of the cutting fluid that they use in most tool shops is notorious and has been known for 80 years. As the technology has increased and the speeds and tolerances have increased in precision, the need for longer life tools or less failure of tools is incredible. And the TVT cutting oil was recently shipped out, poured into the plant circulation system for the tooling, and the noise went away on the tools, and the tools lasted 10 times longer, and the parts made had far fewer failures. In fact, the rework bin where failed sprockets and frames disappeared because the parts were being machined perfectly by the existing technology just because the lubrication had been changed. So if you have more questions about that, contact us, info@x2-radio.com. We'll put you in touch with the people at NRG Resources. And this is not NRG Resources, the Canadian company that's worth so much money. This is NRG Resources, the American company, which is the up-and-coming lubricant experts in this country. Their fuel additives and lubricants are taking the world by storm. And it's environmentally friendly. Good stuff. You also heard the ad for NitroPack. As winter is approaching, and we're getting down in the 20s now at night up here in eastern Washington State, some of you are commuting to work back and forth, and driving conditions are going to become more and more treacherous as the year and the winter has become more severe. We want you to get yourself to NitroPack. Just click on the NitroPack banner at x2-radio.com. It's on the left-hand side there. That is a emergency preparedness company which I have personally vetted. They've been in business over 19 years, tremendous integrity in the business. Everything from winter survival kits to dehydrated food to MREs, space blankets, all kinds of hiking equipment, tents, you name it, they've got it. And if you need a 2-year supply of food for a family of four, they also have that. They'll deliver it right to your door, security guaranteed, in many cases free shipping. Go to NitroPack. Click on the banner at X Squared Radio. Sorry for the commercial, but this is important. We want to help you survive. And one other thing, the folks at Horizon Project, Brent Miller is the producer and director of the Horizon Project. It has taken off again. The popularity has gone through the roof. People are really becoming aware of the possibility of a pole shift, so much so that they are reissuing a call to those experts that helped out with the original Horizon Project, and they are beefing it up, adding even more experts. It is going to be completely refilmed in HD. So if you have an original copy of Horizon Project, you've got a collector's item, I'm telling you. As the new Horizon Project comes out, we will make it available at X Squared Radio. We definitely need you to pick up a copy of that Horizon Project. There is a banner at X Squared Radio. Go to the bottom. You'll get a discount if you use that banner to purchase the Horizon Project. So this hour, what we want to talk about is the unification of the money supply. It is something that many people have no idea what is involved or how it will even be sold. I was talking to some people from the previous generation, I'll put it that way, just the generation older than me and you. And they said, well, there's just no way that's going to happen. You know, the dollar has been around for a long time. It's going to be around. It's a world currency. It's respected around the world. It's the currency against which all other currencies are compared. Used to be true, my friends. Used to be true. The economy is being engineered before our eyes. Those of us that study history, and you just need to go back to the mid-20s to see the engineering of the American stock market and how it was put together, stock and banking. Of course, it is constitutionally banned to have a national bank. Hamilton wanted it, but Franklin said it would be a disaster if we had a national bank, and so banks have been private since day one. Of the United States of America, even the Federal Reserve is a private organization, and the Mint printing the money. But there are a series of events that are about to happen, and if you haven't read The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, and you haven't read the chapter called The Watchers, then you're not going to know this. So in this hour, and actually we have about 40 minutes, I'm going to lay out for you how this is going to occur. It's very interesting. You will not see this in any documentary because it's true. And you can watch it unfold before your eyes as you watch the news over the next 12 to 24 months. We wrote about it because we gleaned it out of historical documents thousands of years old, predicting a time when a very well-engineered system of alchemy would be put into place. Yes, alchemy. You remember alchemy, that art of turning lead into gold? Actually, it was to turn base metals into gold. And if you want to go even further with that, if you look at the original translations, it meant to turn base materials into gold. And we've done it. The United States of America did it when they printed the first dollar bills. All over the dollar bills were Freemason talismans, symbolism, sacred geometries. And the dollar bill is absolutely worthless. The paper is worth more than the dollar bill is worth. But the belief in the system, the faith and credit of the company or the country that backed it up, is what makes the dollar bill credible. It is why people use it. It's why they store it. They are willing to exchange their labor and their goods into this worthless paper and then exchange the worthless paper for something that's of value to them. Whether it's a car or clothes or jewelry or property or tools or whatever you want. And it works. It functions. You don't have to have the gold, and you don't have to go work for the car company to get a car. You don't have to work for the dentist to get your teeth worked on. Everybody accepts this system of exchange, including criminals, including those people out the society in which we live. And if you can't get your hands on the official document, the official printed dollar bill, then why not just make your own? And that is exactly what has been happening. So when we talk about the economy and the unified money system, it used to be that we had all kinds of different forms of currency. We had dollars and marks and francs. We had pesos and rubles and rupees. We had yuan, and we had on and on and on, Egyptian pounds. And every single one of them worked inside their country. The problem is, and Europe saw this first, there was an exchange problem between countries. Countries that were divided by nothing, by an imaginary line drawn across a freeway. And yet they couldn't trade with one another. They weren't an economic force. They were tiny little states with tiny little economies trying to compete on a global basis, and they couldn't do it. And so they fashioned a currency called the euro. And it wasn't easy going. It wasn't easy going because the countries that had no value were getting all the benefits, and the countries that had all the value were getting none of the benefits. So the German mark struggled. And still, Britain uses sterling. Still, they use the British pound. The euro's good. They'll exchange it. They'll use it. But it's still out there. Spain, whose economy was ridden with debt and corruption and counterfeit, was finally adopted into the EU, the European Union. And now they enjoy a unified currency, which, although undulating wildly in value, has begun to settle down as a world currency, with not a small nation behind it, 375 million people behind that currency. Still printed in the same place, and of course subject to exchange rates with the other major currencies, and also subject to counterfeiting. The other major currency, although artificially priced, is the Chinese yuan. Exists in huge amounts, unbelievable amounts of cash. And although that cash, the value of it, is assigned by the country of China, it holds its value because China owns most of the world's debt. They bought it. They're the mortgage holders on the faith and credit of the United States of America. And so we can't wield too big of a bat. We can't go at them with financial sanctions because it won't work. You don't go to the banker and tell them that they're not managing your checking account properly because they own the warranty deed on your home. And you better be happy that they allow you to make payments on it instead of paying the whole thing off at once. Yeah, it's a little different relationship, don't you think? So we have three major currencies now in the world. We have the dollar, we have the yuan, and we have the EU, we have the euro. And the dollar is about to change because this year President George W. Bush signed the North American Union Treaty. North American Union. That means that Canada, the United States, and Mexico are all one economic force. And it's only a matter of time, and a very short amount of time, if you read in the chapter called The Watchers, when the currencies will be united into one. So here we have it. We have a peso, and we have the Canadian dollar, and we have the U.S. dollar that are going to unify into a single currency. Now, here's the problem. There are actually three problems with it, and here is why it is going to be so easy to make this transition. And then we'll give you the solution. And the solution is what this hour is all about. The first problem is, how do you control all that paper? With the technology that's out there, it's so easy to make money. I mean, print money. You can print yuan, you can print euros, and you can print dollars. How many of you, in digging in your wallet right now, just take out your wallet, dump the money out, if you have any, on the counter, and look at the variety of what you have. Dollars. $20 bills, $5 bills, if you got some 50s or 100s on them, take a look at them. Is that the same $20 bill you held in your hands 2 years ago? No. That bill has changed. It's changed a lot. It now has information strips in it. It has different threads in it. It has different ink in it. Every time you spend a $100 bill, they'll take out a funny little yellow pin and draw on it. You know why they do that? They do that because the money has been counterfeited so many times. And I don't mean by small-time basement counterfeiters. I mean by other countries. Iran, Iraq. They counterfeit shipping containers full of cash. Bales and bales of cash. And they dump them into our economy. Worthless copies of the real thing. But you know what that does to the real thing? It makes it hard to track. Because when the banks receive in this money, it's already been spent two or three times by the time they get it. There has already been goods, materials, hours exchanged for this worthless paper. And now it's in the banking system, and the bank can't pass it on. So they have to print a version of it and replace it so the bank doesn't lose money. And then they scrap the counterfeit bill. Well, that costs money, people. It costs millions, in fact, billions of dollars to keep up with that counterfeiting. Here's part two. When you want to make an off-the-record purchase, what do you use? Cash. If you want to buy guns or drugs or sex or whatever it is, you use cash. You don't go to a house of ill repute and write a personal check. Well, you might, but smart people don't. Criminals don't. What they do is they bail up $100 bills and they trade it for Afghani poppies, for heroin, for guns. And they trade it across borders and they ship bales of it around the country. It is the currency of crime. That's part two. The third part is, when you want to start a war, the first thing you need is an army. The second thing you need is stuff to put in the hands of the army. You need guns, you need ammunition, and you need uniforms, and you need food and fuel. And guess what that takes? That takes cash. Nobody goes out and writes a check or borrows money to go to war with another country. Hence, the ECOWAS, the Economic Council of West African States, actually seized control of all the diamond and gold mines in West Africa. Because warlords were not trading cash. They were trading diamonds for weapons. That's why they were called blood diamonds. And if ECOWAS didn't get a control of it, their country, all of the countries were going to be destroyed. They took control of the currency. Now, diamonds can't be counterfeited, but they can be traded in huge amounts for devastating economic effects. So now we have these three scenarios. We have counterfeiting, we have the war on drugs, we have the war on terror, all financed with cash, untraceable, unstoppable. Yes, we can seize the bank accounts of different people if we know they exist and we can track their transactions. But you can't seize their cash unless you can find them. And that's pretty hard to do because all these transactions are clandestine. That means they're secret. They're behind closed doors in the dark. They're sent around in plain brown manila envelopes. Hard to track. Until now. The technology exists. Pull it out of your wallet right now. Go ahead. Pull your debit card out. Is that the same debit card you had 2 years ago? No. Look at it. Look at it closely. Look up in the right-hand corner. You see those three little concentric marks? It kind of looks like a vibration symbol, a little ear or something there. You know what that is? That's a chip. It's a chip that's in your card, thin as a credit card, laminated between the layers. Next time you go to McDonald's or you go to Walmart, you don't have to scan your card anymore. That little magnetic strip on the back, old technology, people. Look up in the right-hand corner. All you have to do is wave the chip. Wave the chip in front of one of the new gas pumps or one of the new currency counters, and it takes your information right off the card without swiping that magnetic strip. They know it's you. They know what you purchase. They know where you live. They have all your personal information on that card. All you have to do is wave it and walk. And the time will come when you don't even need that PIN number. Because if you have this card, it's all you need. Because it's going to be linked with something else. You remember those little UPC things, little keychain things that you get, the little MVP thing at Food Lion or whatever market you shop at? Oh, do you have one of our discount cards? Look, all you have to do is wave. Oh, gee, look there. You saved $6.42 off today's purchases. Good for you. You know why you saved that money? Do you think the markets like giving away $6.42 for everybody that walks through their line? Oh, they get the money back. They get the money back from the orange juice companies and from Clorox Bleach and from Tide, and they get it back from Kenner and all the companies that advertise, because that UPC symbol tells them everything you bought that day. And that UPC symbol is already linked with where you live, how often you shop, and when it's combined with your debit card information, they're going to have all of your purchasing habits. They're going to know how often you drink orange juice, whether you're a smoker, and whether you drive a diesel or a gasoline vehicle, and they're going to know how you vote. All of that information is going to be tied into one system. Now, how do you make it work? How do you make it function? How do you turn all that advertising information, all that marketing information, all that electronic debit information into something of control? Here's how. If you haven't read the chapter, you're about to find out something that will make your knuckles turn white. You think you're afraid of one world government. You have nothing to fear. We have a very difficult time governing ourselves. We don't even have a government. We have a loose coalition of bureaucracies. Don't worry about it. But a unified money system, that's something entirely different. Because the one thing that we are is we are an economic people. Yes, we have an ecology. Yes, we have a sociology. We interact with one another. But we are an economic society. Whether we buy an imported wine or we buy Chinese shirts from Walmart, we are interacting with economies all over the world. In the next 45 days, what we do in the grocery stores and markets of America will determine whether we have a recession or whether we have a booming economy next year. 60% of all the retail purchases in an entire year will be made in the next 60 days. The rest of it is just window dressing. The next 60 days will determine whether we're successful or not successful this year. And my gamble is, when you go to Toys R Us this year, they're not going to have enough stock. They're going to sell out of the good stuff, and you won't get it again till next year, because nobody took the risk. Everybody gambled that you were going to be holding on to your money this Christmas. So if you're going to put off your Christmas shopping, you're going to be buying brand X. You're not going to be getting the name brand stuff. Here's what it boils down to: a unified money system. The euro, the yuan, and what is soon to be the North American dollar are all going to be unified into one currency. Well, that's one great big problem. You're not going to be able to keep up with the counterfeit. You're not going to be able to maintain money, paper money, across the entire world. Not possible, people. Not possible. And you're not going to be able to control terrorism or drug traffic, because people will be trading in Shanghai and L.A. and Mexico City and Toronto in the same currency. Under the table. Unless it's all electronic. If it's all electronic, nobody's going to be making an under-the-table purchase with a debit card. Nobody writes a personal check for drugs. Nobody writes a personal check for a stolen gun or for C4 explosives or for a Sidewinder missile. Sorry. They'll catch you. In 24 hours, they're going to be knocking on your door, and you're going to be in jail. End of story. And that's what the designers are hoping for. The insurgency, the ability to resist government and its designs will be designed out of the economic system. Now, there's only two ways to survive outside this system. Because if they decide to hit Control-Alt-Delete and you disappear from the system, you neither have earnings, savings, credit, or the ability to buy legitimately. You still have to live. The age-old, and I mean really old, go back 5,000 years, practice of barter will return. I will build your house if you will treat my kids. I will fix your car if you will fix my teeth. I will grow you food if you provide me a piano. And unfortunately, with this new system, all of that transaction system will be illegal. Oh, how can that be? How in the world will they ever pull this off? Why, that's impossible. That's the mark of the beast, to have irrefutable identity tied with an irrefutable money supply, tied with an irrefutable pattern of purchase. Because people, when they go out to eat, they eat the same thing every time. When they buy a car, they buy the same kind of car every time. When they vote the same way every time. And when there's a party in power and they want to stay in power, the first thing they're going to do is access that computer and find out who is where and who votes and what can I do to keep them from voting. Or how do I get more people that are interested in the way I believe to vote and less people that believe in the way he believes to vote, to not vote. That's the idea. And you're watching it on the news, people. Come on. In Ohio, 8,637 fraudulent voters discovered already. People that move in from Arizona to Ohio, live there 3 weeks, register to vote, vote early, and then move back to Arizona. When you got an election as close as this one, 10,000 votes here and 10,000 votes there in key states will make all the difference in the world. And when you got a multi-billion dollar corporation out there generating millions upon millions of fraudulent votes, fraudulent voters, people that aren't even citizens of this country voting for a social system, you can't win. There's no way to win. It's coming. And we want you to be prepared. When the law is passed, and it may be an executive order, it will sound something like this. H.R. 7253, you have 30 days to turn all your cash back into the bank. If you don't turn your cash back into the bank, possession of cash will be seen as an act of terrorism, and it will be confiscated from you, and you can be fined and lose your right to vote. How about that? Does that make sense to you? You have 30 days to turn all your cash back into the bank. You will be issued a debit card. You can purchase from that. Your paychecks will go to that. Without it, you will not be able to buy, sell, or trade in this country. You will never fill up your tank again. That $40,000 car you own, park it. Can't put gas in it. You can't buy a drop for it. No station will sell you gas without a debit card. Does that make sense to you? That's the way it's going to happen. Will you buy into it? You bet you'll buy into it. And maybe not my generation, but my kids, no problem whatsoever, Dad. I'm not holding on to cash. I got a debit card. Don't need cash. I can buy everything from a hamburger to a pair of tennis shoes to a plane ticket. What do I need cash for? Exactly. And now you see how the economy and a unified money system is going to turn. And it's going to be a reality. There is no way out of it. So how do you protect yourself? There's two ways. One, get out of debt. If you owe money on it, sell it. Get out of debt. Pay everything off. I don't care what it takes. Don't eat out for a month, for 6 months, for a year, whatever it takes. Get out of debt. Pay everything off. And don't file bankruptcy. That's a chicken way out, and it's not patriotic. You get out of debt, you become the master of your own destiny. You are no longer a slave. Part two, do what you love doing. Live your dream. Don't work because you have to. Work because you like it. If you're throwing up every morning before you go to work, you're doing it wrong. Find out what your dream is and begin living it. Here's what's going to change. Your attitude is going to change. Your ability to control your own future is going to change. Your ability to live is going to change. And you're going to lose your fear. And a society that has no fear is not controllable. No conspiracies, people. Just economic observations here. There's no all-powerful Illuminati. There's no 125 families in control of everything. Nobody's going to hold all the cash and, you know, fill up their swimming pool with it and dive into it. It's not out there. This is about control. This is about trying to keep a nation free and keeping criminals from getting a foothold and an ability to trade with one another. However, it will make the criminals, as they do come to power, much more sophisticated, much more powerful, and they will be linked in with government. And they'll be pretty easy to spot. So there you have it. That is the economy and the unified money system. And you can read about it in a chapter called The Watchers in The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2. The last thing that I want to talk about, we have about 20 minutes, and I want to bring this up, is the pyramids. Now, we've talked about this before on the program. We've got Robert Balval coming on the program next month. But I want to go ahead and set the questions in your mind now. Is Giza the first or the last pyramid? Let's answer that one first. If you've ever been there and you walk through these complexes, and you walk through Saqqara, let's say, many experts, including Zawas and all of the experts in Egypt, claim that Saqqara was the first pyramid. It was sort of, how do we build this building without it falling down? And then they quickly worked their way up to Giza. That is absolutely, completely, 100% false. That is somebody that moved into a neighborhood, saw a beautiful home, and tried to copy it, and did so about four times, a bad job of it. Saqqara is a pile of river rock compared to Giza. The truth is, Giza was the first. And when the Egyptians, or those people that became the Egyptians, the original immigrants to this area, who the first pharaoh's name was Pharaoh, by the way, they observed Giza and marveled at Giza and tried to copy it. Giza is much, much older than Saqqara. Saqqara is a cheap, primitive copy of what Giza was. Giza has been stripped. It has been hammered apart by vagrants and thieves and robbers for thousands of years, and it's still a magnificent structure. get there, look at it, run your hands over it, and you will see 1.43 million granite blocks put in place in less than a year. Do the math. Absolutely impossible, even by today's standards. The engineering and geometry of that building, absolutely unfathomable. To think that it took several generations to build that building is, from an engineering standpoint, absolutely ludicrous. Ludicrous. Any engineering project today, if one engineer inherits a project from another engineer, it will change. It'll change shape, it'll change color, it'll change size, it'll change construction methods. It has to. Tooling changes, intellect changes, perspective changes. And the old engineer, well, he's dead. It's my project now. We're going to do it this way. Trust me. That pyramid, Giza, was built by a single engineer in a very short amount of time, and it was using technology we have not seen before or since. In fact, man may not even have seen that technology. So the question is, who built the first pyramid? Who built Giza? That's a great question, seeing as how there was no writing left behind, not a single drawing, not a single picture of how it was built. And then the next question, why? Why was it built? Ooh, Robert's going to answer this question big time for us. So you do not want to miss that interview. Robert Balval, the book is The Egypt Code. He is the one that broke the story of the relationship of the Great Pyramid with the constellation Orion. Yeah, we're going to go into it in depth in this program next month with Robert Balval, author of The Egypt Code. And I guess the final message from that is to say, well, what message do they want to leave for us? If they built it as a marker, as a pointer, as a connection between Earth and the constellation Orion, what message did they want to leave for us? There's absolutely every answer you can think of. And our phone lines will be open that week as well. In November, just go to x2-radio.com, look at the guests list, it's free, and you can see when Robert Balval is going to be on. You can check out his website, check out his book, read it, ready for the program, because we are going to go places no one has ever gone, ever, with why the pyramids were built. It's a fun trip, and I recommend going with William Henry myself. WilliamHenry.com, I think it's William Henry, WilliamHenry.com or WilliamHenry.net, one or the other. Check it out. Magnificent Egyptologist, and you won't be disappointed. Pardon me. So we're finishing the biodiesel plant up here in Odessa, Washington, small town, but a farming community. It's a co-op function, thousands and thousands of farmers in this area, the most fertile wheat and canola growing land in the world. And these farmers have become masters of their own destiny because now they have a place to sell their canola, they have a place to convert it into fuel, and they are guaranteed that their tractors will run when no other tractor in the nation will be running. And we're going to try to do that as many times as we can for as many communities as we can, because it needs to be done. And maybe, just maybe, we can turn the corner on this global warming thing and get a handle on it. I appreciate your participation tonight in our program. Ramon from New York, Gary from San Antonio, and Kristana from Montana, we appreciate you. More than you know, you three are the reason we are here at X Squared Radio. And by the way, if you want to become a talk radio host, if you think you have a subject or a area of expertise that you think other people would be interested in hearing, please get a hold of us at bbsradio.com and see about becoming your own host with a global audience. Who knows? In your mind might be the breakthrough. Somebody sitting in their living room or before their workstation is waiting for. And if you have any contacts at XM or Sirius, let them know. They may not know this. They may not know this, just like Nicole Kidman has no idea. She's 61. Come on, have you seen her lately? She doesn't know. Somebody needs to tell her. But Sirius and XM don't realize they don't have a paranormal channel. Nope. Oh, they have a program now and then, but there's no paranormal channel. And right here at BBS Radio, we've got enough content for 18 hours a day. The best, brightest, most enlightened hosts in the world. And there are millions upon millions of Sirius and XM listeners who surf their dials every day looking for that paranormal channel, and it's not there. The only place to get it is right here. So if you know anybody at XM and Sirius, we can't get a hold of them because they don't have phones. They just aren't reachable. But you can, if you live in New York or Chicago or wherever their offices are, nobody really knows. But if you know where they are and you're listening to this program, let them know. BBS Radio is here. We're waiting. Our millions upon millions of listeners around the world are waiting. That paranormal channel is sitting there just waiting for us. You go through the numbers, one through whatever it is on your dial, and you'll hit some of them. There's nothing there. There's no sound because there's no signal. Because there's no content. Because all of the best paranormal hosts are right here at bbsradio.com. If you don't believe me, check out the stats. X Squared Radio is the fastest talk radio program in North America, bar none. AM, FM, Internet, nobody's even close. And BBS Radio is the number one network in the world. Just check it out. Go to Google ranking, go to Alexa, and check it out. You'll see. You'll see BBS Radio in the top 100 websites. Yeah, right up there with Google and Yahoo. Huge, people. Huge. And you are part of it. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. Take care of yourselves. And we know that you're out there. We know that you're thinking, all the time thinking. November is going to be a great month. We're going to have a lot of hosts on the program that have written some amazing books. And we want you to get your hands on the books. Visit us as often as you can. We'll be here for you. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio, saying, peace, Earth Explorers.